Welcome to another episode of Rebuilding the Palisades podcast, hosted by DSI. Today we have the lovely principal of Donna Livingston Design. Welcome.
Thank you so much for the opportunity to be with you and also to see your operation here, which is pretty impressive.
Thank you. Thank you. Well, let's go ahead and kick it off.
Okay. So
tell us a little bit about how you got started in the design business.
Oh, my goodness. Well, it was such a long time ago, I hardly remember. But so much of design is really in your heart. You know, it's a passion. And I had that passion. I wake up every day, I still have the passion. And I think that's the key to any success. I'm in the same location, same office for almost 40 years. So that says a lot about determination and skill, talent. And I have just had my birthday day a few days ago, and I was so honored by the fact that I had so many interns that remember working with me and, you know, wished me happy birthday. And it was just so rewarding to see the path that you've gone down and the people that you have changed and helped along the way. So I was very lucky to get into interior design, and I think from the very moment I started, I loved it.
Very cool. Very cool. It takes passion to really excel in this business. You've got to really love what you do. Yeah. So it's very, very cool to hear that. You know, you've transformed the interiors of luxury homes and high rises, you know, all across the country. What are some of your influences and inspirations about, what are some of your inspirations and influences, into the designs that you've done over the years?
You know, I think, I was fortunate actually to sort of start in model homes down in Orange County. And so I worked for a builder down there, Don Brand's company, the first few years of my business. And what was interesting about it is I had to do four homes, all different. The Georgetown look, the Manhattan look, the contemporary look. So it made me really kind of get into all forms of whatever the house or the idea was for that house. But I think my roots really come from, I'm born in the South, I'm born in Kentucky, and I think there's a traditionalist about me that still resonates through all those years.
Very cool. Very cool. So you've been featured four times in Architectural Digest Top 100. Congratulations. What would you say has been the highlight of your career? If you could pick, you know, one project, one client over, you know, over that long career, is there one that sticks out head and shoulders above the rest, or anyone that you would say is a favorite?
You know, I honestly, it's an interesting question and something I could probably pinpoint, but it's almost like having children. You know, you get involved in a project, maybe several years you're involved in that project. And so it's like having children, really. It's like you can't pick out your favorite child. Mm. You know, they're all kind of my favorites. And I always find it really hard to, my favorite thing is to be able to do a turnkey project. Mm. And when I've had the opportunity to do that, where I could build from the ground up and really, obviously the clients are involved and I put things in storage and we move things along. But the great rewarding part is that when you put it all in at one time and the client kind of forgot what they ordered or did or saw, and then you put it all together and it actually works. It's such a rewarding experience. And then you hand the key over, and then there's like a letdown. You know, like, I'm never going to work again. This was my favorite house I ever did. And then right around the corner, there's another favorite house. So, yeah. And our favorite client.
Sure. No, I know that feeling. If anyone were to ask me that same question, I feel like I would probably respond in a very similar way.
Yeah.
I've done projects where when it was completed, I thought, wow, this is amazing. This is the crowning jewel of my career. I'll never do anything this awesome again. And then lo and behold, another year or two goes by and there's another, you know, favorite project that comes along. So, I know the feeling. So kind of dovetailing on that question, is there a specific client interaction or, client experience, regard to working with a specific individual? Is there a certain, don't name them, of course, but is there a, a certain, unless you want to, I guess, a certain client that you worked with where the interaction was just amazing, just unforgettable?
Well, I think really honestly, some of my best clients have been strong women clients who really know what they want. They don't want to be involved in the mishigasse of everything, but they make decisions. And I think that the best clients are clients who really move through it, they're not scared. They're confident people. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a very rewarding thing. I think you never have a bad client. That's the MO. But the clients that don't make decisions, or they think about it, or they get back, sometimes the bachelor client that every time you go to a meeting, there's a new girlfriend, so then you don't know which tune to dance to. So there's some of those as well. But I think really the best kind of clients are clients who move through things and you keep the energy going on a mm-hmm. project and you keep your team going and everybody has their role and we move along smoothly.
Sure. I can definitely understand that. And I can also certainly appreciate a decisive customer.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the best,
mm-hmm.
Where we can get a decision and move forward and keep everything rolling. So in our business, we get a lot of kind of outlandish requests. We're asked to do some kind of crazy things from time to time. Maybe things that we haven't done before, maybe we have done them before, but in your business, what is the wildest, most outlandish request that you've gotten from a client in your career?
Ooh. Well, there are a few little things. We've had strip poles. We've had, I had at one time designed a bathtub that could hold 8 women at once. And it had to be engineered specifically to hold the water and to keep the temperature warm enough for it to fill up. Maybe those kinds of things don't happen so often now, but that was definitely a challenge. I've done underground parking, which is interesting. Security, obviously. But there's just been amazing appreciation also when you get through these difficult moments. Every project is different. And you come in with the same tools, but you might use those tools slightly different every time you go into a project.
Indeed. Indeed. So we're currently collaborating, DSI is collaborating with your firm on a project in Beverly Hills. How do you strike a balance between timeless design and the ever-evolving technology trends in these homes that we're working on?
Well, I think the biggest change, obviously, you may have a certain design concept, but the biggest change that's happened in our business is technology. And so even I'm working on a project right now in the Palisades, and 2 years ago, before any of the disaster happened, I went in and changed all the bookcases because we don't need 24-inch depth for TVs and things like that. So we were able to streamline the cabinetry and the technology, and we were able to pick up a couple feet in the room. So, you know, there's a lot of things about technology that really has improved people's lives. And, you know, instead of having cookbooks, you can have, you know, Alexa, give me this new recipe.
And sure.
There is a lot of things that security that really has helped along and improved the quality of a home.
Indeed. Yeah, without doubt. We've, I wouldn't say struggled, but over the years, the technology business generally has been known to kind of, you know, put a touch panel or an iPad or a keypad or somewhere where, you know, maybe it doesn't really belong without as much kind of attention to, you know, the design theme of the home. And I'm really proud of our team here at DSI that really prioritizes, you know, supporting the design, the interior and architectural design theme of the property to try to keep our stuff, it's got to go somewhere, but try and keep it, you know, away from that design story or try to select components that help support that design story, you know, from a finish perspective and in other ways. But you're absolutely right. Technology has changed dramatically. Just over the last 20 years, 10, 20 years has changed immensely. And we're in for a likely continual change here in the next, coming decades.
Well, just not to interrupt you for a second, but I tell you, I just had it recently. I had a situation where I was doing a condominium at the Sierra Terrace. And, you know, I did a beautiful custom bed, new mattress, went up and down, but the gentleman was handicapped. So he couldn't reach around the bed to turn off his light or turn on his light. So these are other little considerations. You have to be able to put the pad close to the bed or where he can reach it without getting up and having to walk over to his panel. So there's a lot of things now that you can put in the drawer. You know, there's things like that that we can work together when we have a situation that's unusual.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. We look forward to many more future collaborations with you. So this is a question that I love to ask, very much looking forward to your thoughts on this. So interior designers always, in my experience, always have a close relationship with the customer, mm-hmm. or at least in the context of all of the stakeholders that may be involved in a project, many, many times, 99.99% of the time, the interior designer has a very close relationship with the main stakeholder, the main principal homeowner. Why is that?
Well, I have a theory. I always say that the architects are on the honeymoon and the interior designer is in the marriage. So, you know, we have to really, it's not just about decorating and getting a great sofa or a coffee table. It's really learning livability. How do they live their life? What's the lifestyle? You know, a lot of times when I'm working on closets, you know, I take into consideration how tall somebody might be, how deep the closet needs to be, how tall the racks need to be. So we do a lot of things that really become livability. So you really learn how that person lives. And I think that's a very important ingredient that we get to, do they want blackout shade? Do they want light? Do they, you know, how do they want their kitchen laid out? So when we walk away from a project, not only do we hope that it's architecturally cohesive, but also that it's livable. I think that's a very important ingredient. What is your lifestyle?
Interesting. That's coincidentally very similar to the approach that we take on projects. Mm-hmm. We don't start, we don't lead with a specific product. We ask questions about how's the customer going to live in the house? You know, what's your lifestyle? What are you into sports? Or are you really into movies? Or are you really into music? Or, you know, do you have to watch the news every morning at a certain time? Is there a certain way that you like to do those things? So it's interesting. We have a bit of commonality with regard to our approach there.
Which will make us a good team together going forward.
Indeed.
Yeah.
Indeed. I completely agree.
Discover why we're the most awarded home technology firm in the U.S. Our design-centric approach transforms your space with effortless control of lighting, motorized shades, audio, video, and more. Our friendly experts guide you every step of the way, no tech speak, just smart, stunning simplicity. We provide years of care from our award-winning service and support team. Experience technology that feels as good as it looks.
So you mentioned that this was, you know, a complete disaster. The Palisades fire, without doubt, is an unprecedented disaster in modern history and in Los Angeles history. How are you helping clients through the rebuild process after, you know, suffering this type of loss, you know, whether it was a total loss or whether they just have to gut the interior? You know, how do you kind of help them through this process? We're kind of helping to, you know, hold their hand, so to speak, you know, through this, you know, very much emotional, and, you know, traumatic, time period, you know. So what are some of the things that you're doing, to kind of help the customers through that part of the process as you design new interiors for them?
Well, I had the opportunity to walk back into a project that I literally built from a piece of paper 30 years ago.
Wow.
They were married in the house. It has that. I've never actually filmed the house for my portfolio because probably I was so young at the time I couldn't afford it. But it was really, you know, when I first got there were remediators there, machines to get the smoke down. This was mainly a smoke damage thing. But in this particular case, all the window coverings came down, all the carpets came out, mm-hmm. all the soft goods, all the mattresses. And it's just completely stripped down. But at the same token, I actually spent about 3 hours in the house by myself one day. And I went, wow, I'm proud of myself. You know, this is really lasted 30 years. Did I know this much that 30 years ago in my business? And then I just was a very sentimental and yet profound and emotional experience, even for me. But now I see... it's a time where people have to grieve a little bit. FEMA and the National Guard has really protected the area. So you have to have identity, your checkpoints. So they really made the area quite safe, and they are taking away the debris in a very thoughtful kind of way. And so now I see 3 or 4 months later, we're at a point where the house is stripped down. They love the house. They don't ever want to change anything. But now I'm going to sort of gently suggest that they redo the kitchen. I've always wanted to raise the master bedroom ceiling. So we're going to put in a few new windows. They're going to be steel, not wood. So there's going to be different changes and opportunities to just improve what they have, which they love. It'll make it just a tiny bit better.
Yeah, interesting that you mentioned the change from wood to steel, of course, or metal. They can, obviously, windows could be steel or, you know, aluminum. But, you know, the change of materials is critical given how fire spread. We've talked to, you know, a few architects and general contractors on the podcast, and, you know, we're hearing a lot about changing the materials wherever possible to materials that are fire resistant and are more fire resilient. Given how, you know, hot, how powerful the fire was, in a lot of cases, there was just nothing that could be done. But anywhere that we can make a difference in making a home more fire resilient, that's definitely a move that, you know,
I
given
think materials
the
will
take.
Be a very big consideration. I think when we come together to build a new house, those kinds of things will be very much taken into consideration with the architect, the contractor, the designer, and the client, you know, because it's going to cost more money.
Indeed.
To build those fire-resistant type of homes in the first place. You're going to have to use more steel windows, concrete sidings, things like that. I think one of the reasons my particular house in the Palisades survived was the location, location, and also they had a new roof put on a year ago.
Interesting.
So, but three doors up, everything is gone.
Sure.
And it's going to take a moment emotionally for people to really want to move back into that area.
I know. Yeah, it's a big scar on the city. And with all of the customers that we know that have lost homes or have had damage, and the conversations I've had with them anyway, they're very cautiously approaching the process because it will indeed be some time before the neighborhood resembles something that people really want to move back into.
And there's going to be a lot of construction, a lot of chaos for a while, noise.
Indeed.
And things like that. So,
yeah, we've got our work cut out for us collectively here in Los Angeles to get this area rebuilt. I'm guessing a decade or so of construction to really get it back.
It'll be different. You know, these communities, a lot of them were older communities that had a lot of charm and people owned their homes for years. I mean, people like that may not rebuild because it's just too much for them. They're, they don't want to go through the building process of 2, 3, 4 years. You know, they are trying to up some of the permits to make them faster, but it's still a clog. And I think that when you have a neighborhood that's been wiped out, it's going to take a moment, maybe longer.
Sure.
Before it comes together.
Yeah, indeed. Well, staying on the theme of the fire, when we have a wildfire, when we have a wildfire, one of the first bits that kind of starts to happen is the embers fall. They can travel in some cases many miles.
Oh yeah.
And in a lot of homes, you know, the eaves are a place for you know, ingress, right? So the embers make their way into the eaves or into some opening and gets into the property, and the home actually burns from within. So, you know, that's something that's been addressed somewhat over the years, and a lot of the vents have been upgraded. All the new vents now are, you know, ember resistant, and that's less of an issue than it used to be. But as these embers fall and land in the backyard, for example, onto patio furniture, that material is very flammable and can lead to, you know, an exacerbation of the intensity of the fire and can, you know, start parts of the property on fire that maybe otherwise wouldn't start on fire. So are you seeing any kind of trend in the outdoor furniture market toward more fire resistant materials, or are you making any decisions with regard to, you know, outdoor furniture in the context of embers and the spread of wildfire?
Not quite yet. I mean, there is new product coming out, concrete, outdoor furniture, things like that. I happen to live in a fire area. I have a beautiful hill, like a mile long, I mean, an acre. But I think one of the things that's important for all people in Los Angeles, which we take for granted, the beauty of the brush and trees and everything grows very fast. And you have to be aware of the fact that we have had limited rain this year. Mm-hmm. And so when you get a notice from the fire department, which we all do when we live in the fire area, to clear your brush. And
very important.
And I made an effort to do that in December, not even thinking there was going to be a fire. But, you know, this is a big consideration in Los Angeles. It's not just outdoor furniture. It's the whole package, really, basically. How to maintain your house, your roof, the brush around it, and keeping the trees off the roof. Things like that are very important. And I don't know. I mean, people say, oh, we'll just get a hose and get from your pool and water down your roof. When you see what happened in the Palisades and how fast it went, and just, it was almost explosion after explosion.
Yeah.
So, you know, the best thing to do is to pack up your personals and just get out.
Yeah, you're right. And anyone that was anywhere near this area when the fire started could tell you that you just got to get out of there.
Yeah.
There's no time to stop. There were folks that grabbed a water hose and successfully defended their property and others' property. Which is a valiant thing to do when you've got 50, 60, 70 plus mile an hour winds pushing 100 foot flames your direction.
Yeah,
right.
Believe me, I thought about it too, but then I realized I didn't have a ladder and, you know, and you know what, when I actually saw how it was a hurricane of fire.
Absolutely.
And you can't do that with a hose.
No.
So indeed. We have to be smarter and just.
Indeed.
Yeah.
Indeed. I totally agree. Yeah. So, you know, your home is your sanctuary, right? It's, you know, it's your safe space. Do you plan to approach, you know, the upcoming projects in this area with kind of more therapeutic features, you know, given the, you know, the intensity and the trauma around the event? You know, are you thinking of, you know, trying to include any specific type of design feature into your new projects that kind of has a, you know, has its roots in therapy, so to speak?
Not really. I mean, I think really, honestly, people in Los Angeles who have money, they have those features anyway, you know.
Indeed,
I mean,
they do.
You know, so, you know, if you're really working in a high-end home, they have their yoga room, they have their, you know, calm, you know.
The salon.
You know, so.
The gym.
Yeah.
Sure.
And so we, we already have those kind of features, I think, in many ways. Anyway, but it's always tickling. It always tickles my soul when I get a chance to work on something like that. Where, you know, they have a beauty salon or something like that. But really, the normal, everyday person doesn't have that. So, I think you have to find that calmness within yourself. Well, that's a complex question, of course. I happen to have a house that existed, and we're going to just make it better. But we're not going to theoretically take down the crystal chandelier.
Right.
But this will be an opportunity for me to add more to the house. And there happened to have a good insurance company to say, you know what, get rid of all these mattresses. You know, take all this. This carpet was just down new last year. Take it up. You know, so I think the insurance companies are being very cautious about that and very willing to have it be a safe environment for them to move back into.
Indeed.
Yeah. And as far as new homes and new materials and things like that, I think those will be a big considerations. I think there'll be no more wood windows. I think there'll be more steel type of windows, which will give it automatically a more modern, updated look. There'll be some considerations with landscaping. Obviously, water features, things like that will help with the rebuilding and make it a very charming new place as well. Just it'll be different. It won't be Mayberry, but it'll be Palisades renewed.
Sure. Yeah. Now I'm very much looking forward to, having the opportunity to, to help folks, mm-hmm. Get back into their space again. It's a very, I already used the word traumatic, but when I went down into the Palisades the first time, it was all the way up to the very top of the neighborhood, to look at two homes that survived the fire, but were heavily smoke and particle damaged. And driving through there was it was traumatic for me.
It was just traumatic just for me see. Too.
I didn't lose a property. We've got lots of customers in the Palisades, and we worked on a lot of homes there over the years. But seeing the neighborhood,
I know,
was just, if you don't feel anything driving through there, you don't even have a soul. It is so hard to see, Sunset Boulevard and Chautauqua and all the streets that we've been driving on for all these years. Everything is just gone. It's tough for me to see. I can't imagine what the homeowners have felt in having to run from this fire and then come back to their neighborhood completely destroyed. And even if they didn't lose their home, it's still just been such a crazy, wild, traumatic experience that I think we'll all, feel a lot better when we've got the area put back together and everyone's, living in the neighborhood
again. I think another thing too, just as a side note, I know I'm trying to put a team together now for the house I'm working in, and the subs that I'm trying to call out to, they have to then have a permit to be able to get into there. And they don't know quite how to go about doing it, but it's quite easy.
Yes,
you know,
it is.
You go to West Side Pavilion, you get into the FEMA line. And so, you know, everybody should be aware of the fact you just don't go in and out. You know, you really, there, it's a protected area at this point.
It is. I'm really glad that you brought that up, because getting close to the end of my list of questions, I was going to ask if there was anything else specifically that you'd like to discuss. And I think that's a great point to riff on. The process is very easy, and we should post a link in the comments.
I think so, too.
So everyone can follow. But essentially, when I went through, it only took a few minutes.
I know.
I went upstairs mistakenly the first time, where homeowners have to go, which is a different line from where subcontractors go. But once I got in the right line, I realized where I was supposed to be. The line moved along really quick. I presented my ID. I gave them the address where I was going to work, a little bit of backup proving that I had business at that address. They you know, signed my name, you know, they recorded that I was there, they gave me my permit, and I was out in no time.
Well, this is what I think has really been very well done and very well organized by the city.
Indeed, yeah.
Whether it be in Pasadena or Altadena, you know, they have to really protect the areas. For the homeowners whose homes have survived, and also just that there's not looters and, you know, nefarious type of people. So they've really, I think, done a very good job of organizing that. My client had to put her ID up, so I put my ID up, and then we have a paper. So, and then the National Guard does check my ID when I go in. So I think that we need to have, that should be part of the link for sure, because some people just are resistant to do it.
Sure.
You know.
Yeah, no, I would give the agencies involved and the city a lot of credit there. Mm-hmm. It's well organized. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's easy to get in and out. There's, you know, a couple military guys, you know, the Humvee at the different entrances to the community, and they're keeping, you know, the knuckleheads out. So definitely credit there. So anything else that you would, are there any other resources that you could, you know, give the audience, or any other topics that you'd like to talk about?
Well, I think that, first of all, I guess if you are trying to work, as we are, being subs going into trying to rebuild, I would say right now to stay off of Sunset, because that's where all the dumpster trucks are going. So that will delay your getting to a project. And find out the fastest way to go down San Vicente, down the channel to get into certain areas. I don't know if that's been your case or not, Zach. But
yeah, Sunset is a mess right now,
so
without doubt.
I was very surprised. I mean, I was sort of like just going along, oh, my God, this is a dumpster. You know, this is like, oh, demolition truck. And it's like, so there is a lot going on right now. But the other thing, too, that when they do clear the land, they put a sign on it saying it's been cleared by the U.S. Corps of Army Engineers, and this is debris, you know, toxic free. And I think that that's been very interesting to see how they are clearing the land for you to start to rebuild. So this is going to take a process. And then I think the next big stage is getting a good architect that you can work with. And we work together as a team. You know, like synthetic shake siding and steel, eco-friendly paints, things of that nature, fiber cement siding.
For sure.
So these are all new things that really will become more the way to do it than the old way to do it.
Indeed. Yeah, there are, you know, with regard to traditional architecture, traditional architecture in many cases is, you know, wood siding, right? It's materials that are, very much flammable.
Yeah.
And if you're rebuilding and you're trying to maintain, that kind of traditional classical architecture, but you're having to do it with materials that are, fire resilient, you want to try and find materials that, have that same look, but are not made of wood or some other flammable material.
I think that that's all true. And the other thing that's also might also be a new change as well is to put the power lines underground.
Oh, that's a big one.
Where you can, to keep your, we take California for granted because it's so beautiful. We just think it's always going to be beautiful and nothing's ever going to happen. But this is for instance, where clear your land, keep your trees off your roof, anything that might be flammable. And also the power lines are very important.
Well, it's happening a little bit. I know that there are some parts of the neighborhood in Malibu as well, where they're starting to underground the lines. It's extremely expensive to do that. So to your point earlier about cost, while the utility may come along and go ahead and, proactively bury those lines, there will be a cost for that as well.
Yes.
We will see this, or at least the homeowners in Malibu will, and the Palisades will see this on their bill to the extent that the utility will eventually pass those costs along.
Yeah.
But it's in the best interest of the neighborhood, and it looks a lot better as well.
Yeah.
to not have power poles and lines kind of draped all over the place. So I guess if there's any good that we can say is going to come out of this epic disaster, it will be some of the improvements in, building materials.
And your roads. And, the other thing, too, that I've noticed, because we happen to be working on a project, as you know, in a canyon, and I now see where these canyons are so tight, and you've got a lot of construction going on, and just trying to get out of them. As much as you want to live in the canyon, and it's beautiful, and it's nature, you've got to have a way to get out.
That's right. Yeah, very, very important. Well, that's all the questions I have for you today. I want to thank you again for coming out. It's lovely to have you. And we look forward to...
Well, it's a big treat for me because I'm such a big fan of yours, number one. And number two, you always bring so much joy to everything you do. And I appreciate that. And availability, make everything so beautifully easy. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate the kind words. And thank you very much, Donna,
for
coming in today. Okay. And we look forward to working
with you. Well, I'm very impressed with everything. Just come over to my office and just bring all the equipment.